Hello and welcome to Crosstalk, where all things are considered. I'm Peter Lavelle. Why is the West so determined to continue its Ukraine proxy war against Russia? How does such a position benefit Ukraine? Instead of considering possible peace agreements, the West, led by Washington, seems to see war as the only option. Why can't there be security for all? Crosstalking war and peace, I'm joined by my guest, Lucas Gagenbrick. He is a U.S. Marine Corps veteran, author, and philosopher. In Washington, we have Michael Maloof. He is a former Pentagon senior security policy analyst. And in Dublin, we have Shay Bose. He is an independent commentator and writer. All right, gentlemen, Crosstalk rules in effect. That means you can jump anytime you want, and that I always appreciate it. Michael, let me go to you first here. I mean, there's ample evidence now. We have the former Israeli prime minister. We have the foreign ministry of Turkey. We have the notorious visit of Boris Johnson early into the conflict, that basically telling Zelensky, you got to keep this thing going or else we're not going to back you. So there's ample evidence that the West does not want to see a conclusion to this conflict, because they could. They could just turn off the money, turn off the arms, and it would be over, okay? Does that mean Washington still believes, maybe in a fantasy world, they believe in unicorns or something, that they can determine the outcome of this conflict? Michael.
Well, they thought they could until they realized they couldn't. And now they're desperate. This whole episode is being driven by ideology, by our neoconservatives within the Biden administration. They are hell-bent on not only moving NATO into Ukraine, but isolating, if they can, Russia, and they're not succeeding. And there's a lot of trepidation now occurring within the United States, increasing, I should say. We're not there yet, to try and wonder, well, just how long is this thing going to go, and what's the whole point? And while it's focused on making sure Ukraine, quote, wins, the reality is it's not. And also, it's draining us financially, economically, and militarily, diplomatically, and apparently we don't know how to stop this slippery slope on which we're all gliding on. And NATO is also waking up and smelling the coffee, and they don't like it.
Yeah, Lucas, it's very interesting. You've been in the military. It's very easy to start conflicts, isn't it? Okay, but how to wind them up when you're not winning? And with all due respect to your background, the U.S. has not won a war since the Second World War here. But they continue to the same playbook here. And I'm glad Michael mentioned NATO, because I'm hoping that this will be the end of NATO. It was supposed to never to get in a war. It talk about unprovoked. I mean, they baited the Russians into this conflict, and now they're beginning to have second thoughts. And if you look at what the Hungarians are having to say, the Croatians, it's beginning to. And I think those type of statements doubting this conflict really resonates to the rest of the European Union. Your thoughts, Lucas?
Yeah, I think everyone's getting tired of this. NATO, the U.S., the EU, they're all pushing way too hard, too quickly. They, as Michael said, they thought they could probably win this war. Now they're waking up and smelling the coffee, and they're seeing that it's not really that easy to weaken Putin. In fact, Putin and everyone else around him, his allies, are getting stronger without the U.S., and people are starting to see that the United States cannot even be trusted anymore. So this whole thing is going to end up pretty bad for us here in the West. And, you know, frankly, I look forward to a multipolar world where it's much more fair, rather than having this bully, my country, pushing people around with this rules-based order, which is basically American exceptionalism. Do whatever we want, but no one else could do anything. Russia doesn't have their own security interests. You know, we have to push them into this war because we want to expand our influence around
that's
the
right
world. So, yes.
You know, Shay, that's something I almost feel obligated to mention every time I talk about this, is that, you know, in the West, they talk about maybe there's a Korean solution, a stalemate, an armistice, all kinds of things like that. And I dismiss it out of hand completely, because the West doesn't understand the origins of this conflict. And it's very clear from the Russian side. Hey, the European architecture, security architecture, has failed us. We need to readdress it. We've given you ideas. They were dismissed out of hand here. So the way this thing is going to end is going to have to recognize those security demands here. And the West doesn't seem to wake up to that. Go ahead in Dublin.
Yeah, absolutely. And as Michael and Lucas both say, we have a problem in the West with this sort of long distance projection into Ukraine and into Russia. If there's any nation on earth that understands what long war is and what the impacts of war are, like with 26 million people dead in the Second World War, I mean, it's delusional to think that policy analysts, you know, in Downing Street and in Washington are going to come up with the solution. You got to remember the Minsk 1 and 2 accords are widely recognized as being the solution to this war before it ever happened. And we've learned recently that, you know, the West, NATO slash Ukraine, were essentially using those accords to build this NATO, de facto NATO army on Russia's border. So I think the idea that Russia's going to buy into another sort of Western-led solution, if you like, to the Ukraine problem, and it is becoming a problem, as Michael and Lucas very pointedly point out, economically, socially, you know, particularly in Europe, we're starting to see a massive backlash against the refugees that are pouring into European countries. So, you know, the idea that we're going to impose or that there's going to be a modeling of some sort of solution and it's going to be put to Russia, it makes this more and more likely, in my view, that Russia is going to be more skeptical this time. Oh. And a battlefield solution to this conflict, unfortunately, looks more likely as it grinds on.
You know, Michael, is go back to Washington. I don't know if you read Responsible Statecraft, their website here. It's a curious mishmash of things. But, you know, there's still this belief in American hegemony. We just have to weld it in a more positive way. Robust diplomacy, I always say. But they're always saying it's in Russia's interest if they do this, this, and this. I mean, the arrogance of that, okay? The Russians' interests have been completely dismissed. That's why we're here. In the way we are, because no one takes it seriously. Well, now they have to start taking it seriously, Michael.
Yes, well, it's happening now as we see it. There is a concerted effort by Mr. Putin and others in the East through Eurasia to create this multipolar order, to get out from under that Western sanctions, Western financial reliance, and the dollar. And switch over so they can all begin to breathe and work together again, because it's the U.S. hegemony and its use of the economic weapon is what really, really did it. And I think that we're going to be seeing this accelerating now in the months to come. Look, the United States pushed the NATO to expand contrary to all agreements. There were at least a half a dozen agreements. Putin warned them about it. They didn't listen, and they don't. And now we're seeing the consequences. But especially when your own security is at stake, and the U.S. being so far away and having to travel so far to create havoc, just doesn't appreciate what Mr. Putin was talking about. If we were next door to Russia, they would understand.
Yeah, Lucas, you know, George F. Kennan, the architect of containment during the Cold War, I don't think if he were alive today, he would be called a Putin apologist, okay? But, I mean, he said this way back in the day. He was actually skeptical of NATO being formed in the first place, okay? And then I think he died at the ripe old age of 101, and he was still saying NATO expansion is a very bad idea. So people will say on Twitter, you know, the four of us are just puppets and all that. But one of the greatest geopolitical thinkers of all time said it decades ago, Lucas.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I mean, look, people who call us apologists are just, in my opinion, they're just either ignorant or they're trolls, they're bots, they could be NAFO bots, or they're psychopaths who don't understand war. I've been at war. I wouldn't wish it upon anybody. So I just don't want to see this war get worse, and it's probably going to get worse because we know how Washington works. They always push too far. So those of us who want peace are called warmongers and Putin apologists. Well, Putin has been offering peace during this entire conflict, whereas Zelensky has been rejecting it even during Christmas. So, you know, it tells you right there who was pushing what. It's not Putin and the Kremlin pushing for war. They responded to a genocide happening in the Donbas. What, he's supposed to sit there and let it happen? He's saying, please stop this. All these accords were broken. Why should he trust the West? Why should he say, trust anything the West says at all? We know, everyone knows, America will literally lie to invade your country. What makes you think that they'll respect any deals they make with you? Look how we treat our allies. We were friends with Saddam, then we killed Saddam. We were friends with everyone. We always backstab everyone. So there's
Don't forget to mention Gaddafi. He did everything they wanted. He did everything they wanted. Okay, and look what happened to him. Shay, you know, one of the things that really, a real pet peeve of mine is unprovoked attack, unprovoked, it was unprovoked. Well, anyone watching this program that has any a scant knowledge of the conflict here knows this goes all the way back to the illegal coup in 2014 and the Minsk Accords that you already mentioned. Go ahead.
Yeah, I mean, of course. And I mean, I've just recently written a comprehensive article on that. And one of the main, a lower level media presenter in Ireland just responded with three laughing faces. He didn't challenge the article because nobody wants to challenge or debate with people like Michael, Lucas, myself or yourself. They just want to insult us and try to suppress what we're trying to say. Of course, you know, NATO itself should have disappeared when the Warsaw Pact disappeared. It was established, you know, post-war to counter the Soviet threat, but it didn't disappear. And I mean, this is the gem and the kernel of this whole issue, that you had this expanding military defensive alliance.
How can it be defensive and expanding? I've never heard of such an alliance in history. Okay.
Yeah, it's ridiculous. It's informed by the whole American rules-based order, as Michael said earlier on. And the American rules-based order is best summarized as so: America makes the rules and it gives the orders. And America has been the engine in perpetuating a more aggressive NATO since the Second World War. Plans to invade the Soviet Union at the end of the Second World War and assaulted cities with nuclear weapons, you know, Operation Unthinkable, which Winston Churchill actually sort of discounted.
Okay, Shay, I have to jump in here. We have to go to a hard break. And after that hard break, we'll continue our discussion on war and peace. Stay with RT.
Forward to talking to you all.
That technology should work for people.
A robot must obey the orders given it by human beings, except where such orders would conflict with the first law.
Show your identification.
We should be very careful about artificial intelligence.
The point, obviously, is to create trust rather than fear.
I would like to take on various jobs.
I mean, with artificial intelligence, we are summoning the demon.
A robot must protect its own existence as own existence.
Some nations may be able to turn a blind eye to atrocities in other countries. The United States of America is different. Wherever people long to be free, they will find a friend in the United States.
Dentro la primavera araba e le varie rivolte nei vari paesi si sono inseriti i giochi delle grandi potenze, dei servizi segreti.
Color revolutions is one among several means to reach the goal of conquering foreign lands and bringing them under the helm of US Western economic interests.
Si può pensare ad un'architettura globale di democrazia.
Le rivoluzioni colorate sono un tassello del soft power americano.
The final goal of these theme revolutions is to ensure that there are no independent players in the world anymore.
Memory loss is unusual forgetfulness, a form of memory loss is inability to recall past events. can be general or concern some specific events only. In some cases, the memory loss can extend back decades. Start an intensive course of memory recovery on RT.
Welcome back to Crosstalk, where all things are considered. I'm Peter Lavelle. To remind you, we're discussing war and peace. Okay, let's go back to Michael in Washington. In the first part of the program, Lucas, being a veteran of military conflict, said he wouldn't wish war upon anyone. And Michael, you know, one of the things I find really disturbing is that this is not the 12th month of a conflict. It's 8 years now, okay? It's been going on for a very, very long time. And I remember on the day of the special military operation, what went through my mind is, the rest of Ukraine is going to understand what the Donbass went through after the shelling, the blockade, the humiliation that those people had to experience. We all watched it on TV every single night. I mean, it was an ongoing conflict, but most people in the West have no idea that that happened, no idea whatsoever. And the reason why I brought this up is that when we talk about it on this program and in social media, you know, they want to suppress us, okay, for talking about historical facts, historical truth. That is one of the biggest casualties of this conflict, is shutting down free speech. Michael.
Well, that's why the West controls its media the way it does. We never got any of this, of what was happening in Donbass for the last 8 years in the Western media. We might get an occasional whiff, but nothing of the extreme that had been going on ever since the East decided they didn't like what happened under the coup in 2014. There was a comment made earlier about with NATO expansion and what have you, and then the Warsaw Pact evaporating after the end of the Cold War. What I'm seeing is a possibility that the Collective Security Treaty Organization could become the new Warsaw Pact. And because they've got to have something that will be able to counter this expansion that seems to be continuing, obviously, with Finland and Sweden. Those countries within the CSTO they have varying degrees of wanting to participate, but they have an Article 4, which is equivalent to NATO's Article 5. An attack on one is an attack on all. And if the Federation is hit once again by heavy weapons from Ukraine, I think we're going to see at least Belarus coming into the act as part of that commitment. And it'll be brought on by the West, not by an initiative by Russia or Belarus, but in response as an Article 4 event.
You know, it's a very good point because Lucas, you know, Winston Churchill famously said an iron curtain is descending all across Europe. He said that in Fulton, Missouri, visiting the United States. But it's the West creating an iron curtain now. And it's in every way. It's economic, it's financial, it's diplomatic, it's informational. They're the ones that want to shut off and control. But by doing so, and it's already been mentioned here in this program, the West is isolating itself. They're self-owning themselves. Lucas.
Yeah, everything that the West is doing is harming itself, from the sanctions backfiring, isolating itself. Well, again, one person mentioned earlier that the East is making its own financial network, BRICS, namely. And, you know, Saudi Arabia is even considering joining and leaving the dollar. So that's the end of American hegemony right there. So, you know, everything we're doing to harm Putin and Russia is just backfiring on us and the West and Europe as well. I mean, look at the United States. We all know we blew up the pipeline. I mean, we all know it. And now Germany's like, well, maybe it wasn't Russia. Maybe someone else did it. So people are starting to see through this. Yeah, they're starting to realize that America is just unhinged. It can't be trusted at all. And I don't blame the rest of the world looking at us as crazy as we are, because we are the crazy ones here.
Well, you guys got kind of crazy about a balloon, but that's a topic for another day. Okay. Shay, I mean, you know, for me, I can say maybe something personal for people to understand is that because of the sanctions on SWIFT, what do I have to do? Okay, I'm not going to let the U.S. government determine my financial sovereignty, so I go to a Chinese bank, okay? I got around it, okay? And the SWIFT system degrades itself because it has been mentioned on this program already. Everybody's going to flee it because I don't want to be sanctioned. I didn't do anything, okay? Collective punishment here. So, Shay, I mean, the world has options, and there are ample number of options here. But this arrogance of the post-war era in the West, they still think that everyone wants to be like them. Well, you know what? We don't. Go ahead, Shay.
Yeah. Absolutely. And I think the other thing that's very important is this talk about seizing Russian assets. There is an international sort of community which operated fine prior to this, event where we, you know, now there's talk of seizing, you know, trillions of dollars, basically. And, you know, other developing countries and nations are looking at the United States now and saying, look, I don't really want to play with this guy anymore, because, you know, if he likes my version of democracy, you know, he comes into my country and it hollows us out from the inside. If he doesn't like it, you know, our president ends up hanging from a tree and our economy ends up destroyed. You know, Afghanistan, Libya, Syria, Iraq, the list is endless. But I think what's really important as well to understand is that this war against Russia, it's from the Anglosphere. It's from the UK, basically, and the United States. I mean, I still believe that there are intelligent and, pragmatic heads in parts of Europe who are really worried about this juggernaut with no brakes. I mean, we've got, I think we're on to the 10th sanctions package. Yeah. And if you look at the 10th sanction package, if the first sanction package was meant to cripple Russia, we're on the 10th one now. That should tell policymakers and the populations of Europe something. Alongside the weapons packages. I mean, where does it end? I mean, we started with, I think, you know, anti-tank weapons onto the M777 howitzer, which was going to be this Wunderwaffe. That was going to solve the problem. Then it was HIMARS. You know, now it's, the Iron Dome and it's the Patriot systems. But, you know, as I said at the start, the Russian people understand war. There's not a Russian family, and I've got family in Russia myself. There's not a family in Russia who doesn't understand this, the impact of this. And I think they're in this potentially for the long war. And I just don't think Europe and America have it in the tank.
Yeah, Michael, it's one of the most befuddling things for me, because I just don't understand Europe's behavior other than it's this coercion from Washington, and they use their lapdog in London to as an enforcer, okay, as the muscle, okay, because the impact on Europe, I mean, not only just economic here, but on civil liberties, again, freedom of speech, which has always been a bit wobbly in Europe, but it's even more coerced right now. I mean, it's so puzzling watching people work against their own interests, okay, and I hope people will, you know, say, hey, enough is enough. But there's coercion. You can be canceled. They can go take your bank account. I mean, this is very authoritarian. Michael.
Yeah, well, we see it. We see it every day. I was talking to our mutual friend, Alistair Crook, earlier this morning, and he can't even get RT in the EU. So much for democracy, which was the basis for joining that organization along with NATO. It's pathetic. And that's why you're seeing an acceleration by Russia now with this, with the creation of the SPFS, or their version of the SWIFT system, and it's accelerating. I mean, they're getting many, many customers so that trade can go on, and basically the SPFS is basically the messaging system for the Bank of Russia. And it's linking in with messaging systems with Iran, China, and even Turkey, and it's growing with all these other countries. So this is the response to the sanctions that the United States has been imposing on everybody.
Well, yeah, but and Michael, the key to American hegemony has always been the dollar, not tanks.
That's right.
It's been
That's
money.
Right.
And
now
it is
being challenged.
And now it's being challenged here. Lucas, you know, I don't want to, pick your brain for military things, but since we have a veteran on the program here, I've always thought, you know, sending these our military technologies to Ukraine, and do they actually work as well as they always claim? Because this is the first, you know, you can send it to Iraq, Afghanistan, you can fight herdsmen with AK-47s, but you're Russia is a peer power to the United States when it comes to conventional. I mean, are these weapons are going to be as effective as a lot of people think? Because to date, they haven't been. They're just going to melt like everything else. Lucas.
Well, you know, there's talk of sending Patriot missiles. That you need 6 to 9 months of training. And that's training an American soldier who could speak English. So there's going to be a language barrier. And are they even going to get there in time? I mean, is Russia going to, you know, really crush Ukraine soon and won't even get there in time? Just like we're supposed to send 31 Abrams tanks. They're not going to get there in like 9 months or so. So a lot of these countries, I think, are just telling Ukraine, we're going to send you some stuff.
Lucas, okay, let's talk about those tanks. I mean, is that enough to change the course of the conflict? I mean, I'm not a military person, but when I think of, you know, hundreds and thousands of tanks and they're going to send in a couple dozen, I mean, I don't get it.
Yeah, it's just a gesture. It's not going to do anything at all. Even if they had Patriot missiles, even if we gave them the best technology, even if we gave them F-22 Raptors, we can't send all of them and we can't send enough of them and they're not going to get there in time. Russia is going to start pushing really hard now and everybody knows it. So, you know, these are just to me gestures telling Ukraine to keep fighting to the last Ukrainian because they are being sent to the slaughter in hopes to weaken Russia and it's not working. And the West knows it's not working. I just wish the Ukrainians would realize they're being played so they could stop.
Well, I think, you know, Shay, I think the we have 50 seconds left here. I mean, history will judge the leadership in Kyiv for bringing the, you know, because people talk, you know, Ukraine's a victim. No, Ukraine is a volunteer in this. They volunteered to be cannon fodder. 30 seconds, my friend in Dublin. Go ahead.
Yeah, I think we have to really trace back to the origins of this conflict where, you know, Ukraine assaulted its own people in the east. And, you know, Russia could have, and some analysts suggest militarily should have gone over the border in 2014 when that happened. And this war would have been much shorter. But instead, a de facto NATO army was created, 10,000 men a year. And the result was almost inevitable, in my view.
Yeah. Well, history will judge a lot of people in power today very, very harshly for a conflict that never should have started in the first place and which Russia tried very hard to avoid. That's all the time we have, gentlemen. I want to thank my guests in Brick, Washington, and in Dublin. And I want to thank our viewers for watching us here at RT. See you next time. And remember, Crosstalk rules.